Hey, hey, and welcome to the latest issue of the Three Old Geeks podcast. I am joined by, well, not the usual cast of characters because we all went to Italy to shoot a movie. And I'm going to do it in the rest of the intro in a bad Scottish accent like Vic Morrow. Nah, I don't. I won't subject everybody to that. First of all, the keeper of the inner sanctum, the always the contrarian, sometimes the ruinator, and the numbers guy, Keith the Keys Comics. Keith, how are you?
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. This is going to be wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
When I walked in this morning, I was just like, this is just, the energy is going to be weird today. It's like a Friday energy. It's a Friday energy.
It's a weird energy.
I'm being held against my will. Please help.
And of course, the man with holes in several of his collections and who's always wrong, the pictures guy, the Cloud Prince of Collecting, and the Dirty Old Geek. Brian needs one. Brian, how are you?
Well, I got to tell you, Lance, it's not a Mako. It's not a Tiger. There's only one type of podcaster that can do this kind of damage.
Well, I am, of course, the world's oldest kid sidekick. I am the words guy. My name is Lance, and you get some good shots of that shark, and I'll buy you a lobster dinner! And welcome to another issue. Brian, do you have any non-shark-related news for us this week?
I do. So I had been looking forward to Hickman and Hitch's, Ultimate
Invade or something like
that? Yeah, Invasion. I was a big fan personally. I just actually read this week, I went through and read the Ultimates again, the first 13 issues, which I thought was great. But they are relaunching the Ultimate Universe.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, so this is going to be a much bigger deal than what I thought it was, and I'm kind of excited about it. Hot on the heels of that, the new lineup for Birds of Prey was announced.
Movie or comic?
Comic. And Kelly Thompson is taking it over. This is her first DC work. I don't know how excited I am over this, to be real honest.
What's
with
the
you.
Lineup?
The lineup they've announced now. And it's hard. This is going to be hard for me because I'm missing one.
I thought I had it. I honestly, God, thought I had it.
One issue of the entire Birds of Prey.
And isn't it
canon?
Like the super expensive?
Wait,
like they go on a date.
Only one? I thought you were missing some of the couple of miniseries issues. Did you get those?
No, maybe it's one or two. Okay, it might be two. Okay. But it's the cat.
What's that?
It's the Catwoman.
Oh, Catwoman.
Yeah, it's Birds of Prey, Catwoman, and Black Canary, and then Black Canary and Catwoman. I think it is. Yeah. I'd have to look. But
the number eight.
No, I got that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I have all of
Black, okay.
Birds of Prey canon. I have everything.
Oh, that's right.
Link except for that. The, yeah, yeah. But it is Big Barda. I'm excited about that.
Okay.
Well, you got to have the strength. The surprising one for, Cassandra Cain's Batgirl. Well, call her the orphan, isn't it? No, that was her. She was the orphan.
Yeah, she was the orphan. She's the mute.
Yeah, yeah, not. I'm just thinking spoilers.
As long as it's not Cassandra Cain from the movie.
No.
Okay.
No.
The girl who couldn't poop.
Black Canary.
Okay.
She's leading it.
Of course.
The surprising one to me, but I was actually a little bit excited about, is Zealot. From Wildcats.
Oh, wow. Okay, yes. There's a name I haven't heard. I'm sure she's been floating around, but there's a name I haven't heard.
Well, she's been in Wildcats. Yeah. Wildcats has been out, and it's been good.
Oh, okay.
But that they're putting her on Birds of Prey, okay. That's a little different. I was excited about that. And, of course, the fifth, and I knew, and again, it's going to kill me because it's Harley Quinn.
Really?
Yeah.
Because Harley Quinn's got to be in every book. She's turning into Wolverine. Yeah.
Well, she did a movie called Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
And then she did the Harley Quinn and Birds of Prey series, Amanda Connor. The brilliant fucking Amanda Connor.
I'm not disputing Amanda Connor's brilliance. I'm just...
But then they're putting her in. The art doesn't look great to me. Kelly Thompson does not excite me as a writer. We'll see. I have to fucking buy it because it's Harley Quinn and Birds of Prey.
Yes.
How can we make Brad buy another monthly book? Well, let's put Harley Quinn in the Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's what the marketing guys were talking about in their meeting.
Yeah, Brian will have to talk about this now.
Yeah,
we get one. He'll buy it. So those are the big announcements this week. It looks like, and all controversies aside, this is not the point to this, but that The Little Mermaid did not do well. You know, you have a few of the billion-dollar movies. We've had a couple. And we've had a couple do really well. The Mario Brothers movie did really well. But I think that the end of the... I just got to say, I think that we're seeing the end of the billion-dollar movie franchises and the big... the theaters.
The new Spider-Man animated I heard was fucking... Like, global box office was nuts, dude.
Yeah, it was,
like,
it was huge.
Like,
$500 million I assume that one. Because the first one did incredibly well. So I assumed that this one would just bust out. But I still don't think we're going to see... We're not seeing the numbers. When you have a Disney live-action remake is just printing money. That has been in the past.
Here's the thing. The review I saw was a reviewer that I respected, and they said, did you really need to I mean, like, there was no controversy, there was no whatever... It was, the first movie was so perfect, not being a Disney fan, why did you need to remake this live action? Why did it need to be done?
Printing money. That's it.
There you go.
You need to print money.
The other thing is that they changed a lot.
I heard that too.
It's not like they did a few things here and there. They changed a lot of it, is the problem. That a lot of people went into it for nostalgia, but you changed it so much about it that most people didn't care anymore because it's no longer The Little Mermaid. It's this new thing.
I mean, there's only been two of the remakes that made over $500 million. Most of them hang around $300 million or less. So they have not been as comparatively to what stuff has done.
But you look at what they bring in for streaming and those things. And you know what? I was talking about it with my wife the other day. We were talking about this. And there is no, because it used to be, if it doesn't do really well at the theater, until we get to the video release or the DVD, and we'll see how that does. We don't have that anymore.
Well, there's still DVDs of everything.
Right, but... And Blu-rays. But the sales on those, I mean, how long is that going to last? CDs, they're still CDs.
I'm still buying them. They're still records.
They're still records.
Yeah, the argument to be made about DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever is that they can't take that, they can't take that off your list.
Yes.
You know?
Someone can't be offended and all of a sudden
and
this
take it,
is no
yes,
longer,
and it's gone.
Yeah.
I agree with that. You know what? I do think that movies on the whole, even though I've been to a couple now, which is probably, it's more than I've done in the last 3 years.
And I think Flash is going to do really well. I hope it's going to do really
well. I hope it's going
to
do really
well. I don't want it to do really well because Ezra Miller, but it was a really great film. So
I watched two great performances on two actors who are just no longer going to be playing the parts, and I just felt, shit. Why even put them out? Why? You have to make the money back, but you really hurt the franchise doing that. Because, Ezra Miller can't be Flash. Jonathan Majors can't be Kang. But, man, they really made those parts their own. And then, of course, we had one death this week. That was a big one.
It was a huge one.
Yeah, for us. For some of us. No, for all of us. For all of us. I knew who he was exactly.
The whole country, the world was in that.
And that was the Iron Sheik.
Literally the cause, the catalyst, if you will, for Hulkamania.
No, he big time.
I do not remember I remember wrestling. I remember syndicated wrestling. My first experience for wrestling was Freebird von Erichs, which was a legendary and stuff like that. But the one where I remember going, wow, like was that win in Madison Square Garden, the place the roof came off that joint when Hogan dropped a leg. He's got the Iron Sheik to thank for it. And the guy was a bodyguard to the Shah. He was Olympic qualifier. He was a legitimate athlete.
Yes.
And a great personality. He was just a great personality.
I had the opportunity to sit down and have drinks with him. So it was
fun. Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Him and Robert Zadar, same table.
Wow.
Maniac Cop.
Dude, you have led a varied and interesting life, Keith.
That was at Motor City Comic Con. after the show. It was me, my buddy Chris, and those two guys just sitting there having drinks. It was like, and yeah, he was talking about Gardening Shaw and all this other. I'm like, I didn't know any of that stuff at the time because this was probably early 90s, mid 90s. So it's before you could look up everything on the internet.
Yeah.
So it's like, he's telling me shit. I'm like, really? You were in the Olympics? Really?
Yeah. Like, wow.
And then, of course, every now and then he bursts in, now Hogan screwed me. It would come out of nowhere. My run should have been a lot much longer. Hogan screwed me. Like, okay, that's. But yeah, he was a.
There's always a bitterness. There is always a bitterness.
Oh yeah, but he played to that too. It was
yeah. I mean,
because that was when he was talking semi-normal, you know, in his broken English, but and then all of a sudden he'd yell that. Everyone in the bar would turn around and look.
It's like, so great. So like, so,
yeah, exactly. So it was. It was his character. I think he became so ingrained in him by then. That was his.
Yeah, but how funny. So, moment of silence for the Iron Sheik. Iran, number one. All right, so for this week's edition of the, what is it called? The Three Old Geeks World Famous Top 3 List.
You have to prove it.
What's it called?
We put the disclaimer in the opener. This is a Friday energy show, so it's wacky. So, gentlemen, with 15 minutes on the timer, in deference to our bad movie this week, name your top three most blatant movie ripoffs, and go. My number three is my number three is going to be it's a favorite. I think it's a good, fun
just
movie.
Just because it blatant kind of has a bad connotation, it's just what is the most obvious.
Yeah, but it's has Sharon Stone in an early performance, and so...
Oh, I know what it is.
Woo, 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 because she's just screaming freaking hot. But that's Richard Chamberlain, Sharon Stone, King Solomon's Mind, blatant ripoff of Indiana Jones.
Yes.
Blatant. But I love it because, well, I like Richard Chamberlain and I love...
isn't it? And King Solomon's Mind, that's like a fairly famous novel, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's
I don't know who wrote it or anything like that, but I thought I'd heard that was like a book or something like that.
Oh, it's a legend. It's a thing.
Oh, okay.
There's
the 19th century, right?
Yeah. It's a legend.
Alan Quatermain, right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's got to be that, because League of Extraordinary Gentlemen used Alan Quatermain, and that was all people from...
Yeah.
That's what I thought, that it was like literature or something like that, because
it probably
is. Yeah, it's Alan Quatermain in King Solomon's
There's
Mind,
no pictures
it?
In it, so I haven't seen it. My number three would be... Oh, I have so many. I'm just going to go... I guess you call it ripoff, homage. The Wiz. It is The Wizard of Oz. Or is that too
big? I would say it would be an homage.
Homage, okay.
Yeah, I don't...
Well, then I'll go Guardians of the Galaxy, which is a ripoff of Magnificent Seven.
Okay, that you would, yes.
Which is a ripoff of something else.
Which is a ripoff of Seven.
Yeah.
You really think that there's that many ties between Magnificent Seven and Guardians of the Galaxy?
It's a bunch of quasi-bad guys who join together to stop...
A bad guy.
One big bad guy to save a world as opposed to a town.
Or the universe.
They don't get along all the
time. Actually, you know what? I've never drawn that conclusion, but you talking it out, it does.
Yeah.
Or Eight Men Out. The Black Sox of 1919. Same thing. They banded together against Comiskey. And,
okay. But they did it strictly for the pay.
And they didn't get any money.
No.
It's like one of your heist films.
I thought Arnold Rustin.
Rustin made money.
I thought he paid them all off, though.
No.
Really?
No.
Mm-mm. Huh.
No, the vast majority of them got nothing.
If the vast majority of them got nothing, then technically they didn't get bribed, and Shoeless Joe Jackson should be in the fucking baseball world Baseball Hall of Fame.
Shoeless Joe Jackson had a great series. Yeah. Phenomenal fucking series. And that was the...
And he was the only guy that, if it's eight men out, he's the only guy that didn't get fiddled with or whatever. He's the only guy who...
It wasn't about pedophilia.
Okay. And...
All right, so my number three... is a Lance slash Dr. Rich. You know what? I'm going to call it a Dr. Rich because it's pretty much a genre.
Okay.
But I've been enjoying it recently. And that is the blaxploitation of some of my favorite films. So you've got Hitman, which is a version of Get Carter. You've got one called Cool Breeze, which is a version of The Asphalt Jungle, which is a great one of my favorite heist films of all time. And you've got a little film called Blackula.
I was thinking of that.
A blaxploitation version of Dracula. And all three of them I have watched in recent weeks and enjoyed the shit out of them. But they are all, I mean, like, Hitman and Cool Breeze are literally, like, there are some portions of it that are, like, line for line. Like, and I think when we watched Hitman, you even said, they got the script to Get Carter, and they said, make this a blaxploitation movie. And there's literally lines from both of those movies in Cool Breeze and in Hitman. So, that is my number three.
Well, yes, absolutely. My number two would be the great Bryan Singer in Superman Returns. Which, okay, there were some things like Superman had an illegitimate son that he didn't know about with Lois Lane, who had met a man who seemed very nice but wasn't Superman. The rest of the fucking movie was Superman, was the original Christopher Reeves, Kevin Spacey doing Gene Hackman lines.
Oh, no. Kevin Spacey was doing a Gene Hackman impersonate. I mean, like...
Yes. It was line for line. They crack off the whole California thing. They're going
to... To the point where don't they shoot Superman with a kryptonite bullet and throw him in the water?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it's kind of like with the whole thing where they put the kryptonite around his neck and throw him in the pool.
Yeah. It's just fucking horrible. I've watched that film once and I refuse to watch it again. And I own it.
That's a cool bullet to the eye scene.
That I liked.
The plane rescue
was cool.
Was arguably my favorite Superman scene out of, and I've watched a lot of, you know, animated series. That might be my favorite Superman scene ever. That is, to me, is Superman. But, you know, for 5 minutes out of a 2.5 hour movie or whatever, that's a...
You know what? You've got the world of Superman. Why do you need to make a classic?
Yeah.
It's Christopher Reeve. And it tarnished Brandon Routh, who I thought was a great Superman.
Yes.
And just destroyed him, so...
I was rooting for James Marsden to end up with Lois, because Superman was too creepy and...
Did Alex Ross ever get paid for the Superman hovering above the Earth
image? I think
image?
He did. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Good, because if he didn't, he has a case for a lawsuit. Keith, what is your number two?
My number two is a movie that traded surfboards for cars. It is Fast and Furious being a huge ripoff of Point Break.
Really?
Yeah.
The cop
is undercover, gets in with the group of thieves, and then is trying to stop him. It's how can it not be? And then he sides with them.
I've seen Point Break. I've never seen one.
He lets the bad guys get away.
I've never seen one Fast and Furious movie.
Really? With all those cars in it?
Really?
I'm actually shocked.
They're imports. Who cares?
No, you didn't see Tokyo Drift?
No, I didn't see Tokyo Drift.
That was so cool.
Dom's car in the first
one. Oh, Dom's car in the first one is a 1,200 horsepower Charger that his dad put together. The rest of it's fucking imports. Who cares? God. There's no replacement for displacement.
Ooh. Ooh. Wow.
There. Burn. Ooh.
Oh, that hurts.
I don't know the extremes here. You got goofy-ass Brian, you got... Crabby ass Lance. I don't know. There should be some sort of storm in between you two.
Welcome to Keith's job.
I'm not a storm. They wore cool hats.
All right. My number two.
I want to see if I can shoot on his.
Is you're going to probably steal my number one if I'm knowing you. My number two is actually a ripoff of a ripoff of a ripoff of a ripoff, and it's a remake and a remake and a remake. So it starts off with Red Harvest, which is a novel by Dashiell Hammett. It is made into Yojimbo by Akira Kurosawa, who is in turn made into Fistful of Dollars by Sergio Leone. And then they come back around and they do it into Last Man Standing, which is the interpretation of the original novel Red Harvest with Bruce Willis. And all four of them are four of my favorite movies.
Oh.
First one was a book, right?
First one was a book.
Okay, yeah. So the three of your favorite movies. You said four.
Yojimbo. Okay, so three.
There you go. Sorry.
Three movies. Kiso OCD kicked in. Thank you for correcting.
Did you read the book?
I have never read the book, and it's one of those, like, I've always meant to read the book, and I probably should, but I don't have any time anymore, so.
Get on audio. Listen.
I was just going to say, yeah, now the audiobook thing is so.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
And then you can do it while you're working. Yeah. And do another thing.
Do you have Prime?
I do.
You can get a deal on Audible, because they own
I blew
it.
That a long time ago.
Did you?
Yeah, because when Audible first came around, they gave you, like, a free book, and then you gave you 30 days or whatever, and I use that up right
They'll
when I first.
They'll forget about it.
They'll forget about it. Go through your Prime account.
I'll go through my Prime account, see what I
you
can
get
come
two.
Up with. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then you get discounts and all kinds of shit, but I think you get one a month.
Oh. Yeah. If that's the case, then damn.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, what is your
number one. My number fucking one.
I might trademark that. Number fucking one.
That's not a bad idea, actually.
Is the
it'd be our studio name.
I'm hoping that I don't have the wrong horror film on this one. I don't
horror,
think I do.
Right?
Horror.
Okay.
Horror.
Okay.
Okay.
Horror.
You said number fucking one, so we weren't sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, not horror film. I don't know if there's any blatant ripoff horror films.
I'm sure there is. If you think about it hard enough.
I wonder if there was a cheap Italian remake of Angel.
Oh.
If not, we should make one.
I'm sure there's a porn version of it.
Wouldn't we need to find an Italian?
No, we just have to shoot in Italy. Shoot it like the Italians, have everybody speak their own language, and then dub everybody over in English.
Oh, that would be fun. Anyway, mine is The Conjuring, which is a blatant fucking ripoff of Poltergeist. Down to... And I'm hoping I got the right one. I'm hoping I got the right one.
I thought wasn't The Conjuring about the couple?
The house.
Oh, it's The House. Okay, I thought that was the couple that was on the radio that you guys listened to.
Yeah, but they come to get the thing out of the house.
What's the one with the demon?
Oh, Insidious.
Is it Insidious?
The
demon?
The mole-looking demon?
Yes.
With the red door?
Maybe it's the nun one.
Oh my god. It's some, what's his name, Juan.
What film ripoff? Oh, I think I've got it wrong. You guys keep going and I'm going to
okay, well,
I'm
going to
figure
exciting.
Out what film it is. No, because they completely rip off Poltergeist completely. I mean, down to the two guys with the ghost hunter and then the woman who, and she dies at the end.
Okay, yeah. I'm not the horror guy, so I'm drawing
that's
a
insidious.
Blank.
Where the kid gets taken away, it's Insidious. I'm going to go with, this is Disney ripping off, like, almost scene for scene. The White Simba movie, The Lion King is with some better music, better musical numbers. But if you look at it, it's almost the same goddamn movie.
I've heard that. I've heard that. Yeah, because the White Lion movie from Japan or whatever.
Yeah. So yeah.
Yes.
You didn't even know what I said.
I do. The White Lion, Simba. The White Lion I got phlegmy there.
I think it's a ghost coming.
The Lion King is a ripoff of that.
Yes.
But there's listening. No Hakuna Matata.
Insidious. No,
it is Insidious.
Insidious.
So you were correct the first
absolutely,
time.
Absolutely. It is not The Conjuring, which is what I thought, because there was a lot of bad horror films that came out right then.
James Wan, right? Made those movies?
Could be.
Blumhouse?
Blumhouse?
Yeah, the one that put Blumhouse on the map.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
They're doing action movies now.
So
good for them, but they ripped off Poltergeist.
All right, so my number one, and Keith, I'm surprised you did not take it because it's a ripoff of two things, and it's by the master of the, let's call it a ripoff, the master of, hey, this is popular of the, this is popular at the time, so let's make our own version of it. And that, of course, is the Roger Corman classic, Battle Beyond the Stars, which not only rips off Star Wars, it rips off Seven Samurai, so you got a double bonus feature there. And it is, again, probably my favorite Corman film made in color.
It was on my list. Made in color.
And it's got the fantastic John Saxon as the bad guy.
There's kind of one in it.
Bargain basement Darth Vader. And it's got, what's her name? Sybil
is Danning?
Sybil Danning as the Valkyrie. And the ship
is she the Princess Leia?
No, she's the...
Because they did not have a Sybil Danning in Star Wars.
They didn't have a Sybil Danning in Seven Samurai, nor the Magnificent Seven. However, Robert Vaughn replays his character from Magnificent Seven in this. He's the reluctant guy who's killed all of his enemies, and he's shell-shocked and PTSD, and it's really great. And George Peppard is the space cowboy, and he's got a whiskey dispenser on his belt.
Yeah, that's a pretty handy thing.
Yeah. Unless you reach for the wrong thing when you're in a gunfight. And then...
Well, that can happen a lot of different ways.
We have 15 seconds for...
This is my gun. This is my weapon. That's okay. A whole different thing.
Okay, really quick, I will point out that Mandalorian Season 1 is nothing but Lone Wolf and Cub. And Boba Fett is nothing but... The beginning of it's A Man Called Horse.
A man called horse.
Man called
horse.
Oh, horse.
Yes, a man who
you're
called.
You're still trying to jam that in. So
a man who called whores. Yes, it is.
Hey, what you doing tonight?
And Xanadu is obviously a ripoff of Down to Earth. See episode 133 if you want to hear more about.
Oh, he's even got the reference in there. That was our top three blatant ripoffs of movies. Let us know what yours are. All right, so we're going back to Throwback Sunday, and we're doing a People Also Watched in a way, because we watched 2012's Return of the Killer Shrews.
Dun, dun, dun.
Directed by Steve Latshaw, written by James Best, Steve Latshaw, and Pat Moran, and starring everybody's favorite John Schneider, Bruce Davidson, and James Best. Now, Brian, you had mentioned something along the lines like this is one of the longest...
53 years.
53 years, and this was true to... They wrote it right into the story. It was 53 years later. And, yes, you have a... this was a great kind of self-aware parody of itself and stuff like that, but you have the crew of a reality show, sort of based on Steve Irwin or whatever, going to the Island of Killer Shrews... And piloted by, of course, Captain Thorne from the original Killer Shrews. And in a really surprising twist, you were calling him like Drunk Coward Guy or whatever. What were you calling him? Drunk Coward Guy survives, continues the experiments, has a pack of like a half dozen.
A dozen trained shrews.
That he sicks on people, and he finds out that Captain Thorne, the guy who abandoned him the first time, is back on the island and wants his revenge.
Played by the magnificent Bruce Davidson.
Bruce Davidson.
I don't know.
Senator Kelly was awesome.
What the man did in his life to think that, okay, I got to just work to pay a bill.
Exactly. Like, if I take this one, I can get that car that I really like or something like that.
I assume this is, you know. Before, you know, all these guys started doing shows, making autograph money, and they went, yeah, we'll take a paycheck.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes it is. It's just taking
either
a paycheck.
That or maybe him and James West were friends or something like that. Yeah. Hey, I'm going to shoot this, you know. And again, this was a self-aware, super...
Well, the first movie was very self-aware. Yeah. And again, don't you want to ask me any questions where my accent comes from?
Yeah.
I mean, they threw that in the original.
Yeah.
For the Swedish girl with the Mexican father.
Yeah.
How brilliant. This so lacked that.
You think so?
I
You know what? I couldn't believe that. First of all, the CGI was so bad that I really thought
I thought the dogs that
and
that
carpets. That's what I thought. I want the dogs as carpets.
I actually thought that they did that on purpose to make it the modern version of dogs and carpets. I don't think they did that on purpose.
When he's attacking Johnny Reno, it's so bad because Johnny Reno's hands are to here and just to the right of it is where the actual.
Like, they couldn't even plug the CGI, yeah. like, in the right spot.
Right, in the right spot, yeah. They were terrible.
When they were attacking, they were the worst. When
they were,
like, in the pack on the...
Oh, no, when they're... Just their motion, when they're running on the ground, I've seen literally seen video games that look better. Like, video games from the 80s that look better than that.
Yes.
Yeah, the motion.
Yes.
But I personally thought...
They CGI'd blood. I thought that was funny.
And again, I thought it was the. I thought to me that was the modern equivalent of let's put some dogs in some shag carpeting type of thing. I don't know.
Except that
I thought it was fun.
The dogs were actually scarier when they would do the close ups where they were biting the fence.
Yeah. Oh no, no. I thought, and that's the other thing is like I thought when they were like you know kind of sniffling under the fence or whatever, that was a puppet, and I thought that was actually kind of scary.
The puppets were kind of cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was not opposed to the puppets. I just the CGI was so.
It
bad.
Was. It was bad indeed.
So bad.
And it wasn't like it was done back in the 90s.
Yes.
This was
2012.
Yeah. Yeah. There was better home CGI available. You could find an
8-year-old who could program something better.
Yeah, I watched it thinking I really would like to see the dogs and carpets. Yeah. You would have done so much. It would have been more of an homage had you done that, and we would have had funner with it. But I did love the opening sequence.
Oh, where it's the montage of the original movie? Yeah,
yes.
That was cool.
Where it's telling the story. And...
Yeah. The Rook dying again.
Okay, so James Best has the scene... And it stuck with me to I watched it last Sunday, so it's a week later. He has a scene where he's reflecting on I took my best friend to his death.
Yeah.
Very emotional. It was like,
what is this doing?
In the middle of this movie? Because it was wonderful.
It was fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
It was the Robert Shaw Jaws scene where he's talking about the Indiana. Yeah. Yeah, the Indianapolis. Yeah, it was that good. I watched that and thought, okay. Wow. John Schneider talked about learning more about acting from this guy in an hour than he had in years of schooling. And you saw it. There were a couple of scenes that he did that where he's got the drink in hand and he's talking about those things.
Yeah.
I thought that those, I was really impressed with him that he pulled them off. I kind of dug when he was talking about, you stole the love of my life. What are you talking about?
She hated you.
She hated you. We had a burger and I fucked her.
Yeah.
That was it. Then she went off. We didn't get married. Yeah. It wasn't a... No, we had a burger and I fucked her. It was such a bro moment. I was just... What? That was probably the best. You didn't make it into a huge story. We didn't spend our lives together. Yeah, she died after
children.
Fortune. Yeah. We had a burger and I fucked her.
The other thing that I thought was fantastic was that Bruce Davidson almost like, well, I'm the alpha shrew. And he, well, what did you do for food after all these K rations you found? Well, there were visitors to the island. I was holy shit! He's like boiling the bones of the, I thought that was a nice creepy twist, you know?
Oh, yeah, they...
But there couldn't be nearly enough people.
Oh, no. And of course,
they have to eat 10 times their weight.
Well, a man has his needs. Well, I did all right.
Yeah, I did all right. Yeah, I know. That was.
Oh, there was. Yeah. There was some creepy shit in there that they threw in. I actually wrote notes on this. So then they make the big deal out of the whole Rook thing, which I appreciate. Like I said, I thought that was. What, like you said, what is that doing in this movie?
Yeah.
But then they find the body, and nothing ever happens.
Well, no, and that they implied, like, at the beginning, like, he had this watch that Thorne had given to him or something. And I thought this was going to be a big plot point.
Yeah.
They showed at the beginning, never shows up again.
He reads the thing.
Yeah.
To Rook from Thorne. And then they get killed, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, have him find the watch. Yeah. Have him... Give him that. You've given him this scene.
Yeah.
Give him nothing.
No, I follow through at all.
Yeah, just what a horrible missed opportunity.
the cast of characters was not...
Oh, I thought it was your... It was characters from Central Casting. It was the douchebag reality host. It was the douchebag artiste director.
It could have been a fun satirical poke at Hollywood or television.
I thought it was a little on the nose, but I thought it was, you know, like they had this great line like, well, what do you mean it's scripted? This is a reality television show. Well, that's what makes it real. You know, yeah. They had a great line like that or something
sure.
like that.
Sure, and so they... But they could have done so much more with that. Instead of making them... Instead of making them caricatures, made them stereotypes. And you would have done better.
Okay, so
the only one that was Johnny Reno. Do you want me to take my shirt off?
Yeah.
And this is where I take my shirt off, right?
Yeah. Okay. Why his agent was there made no sense to me. Why the money guy shows up with cash.
Money. With money, yeah.
What? On an island that you don't need it.
Yeah.
Hal Thorne didn't fucking just leave.
Yeah, you people are all screwed and douchebags. I'm getting the hell out of here.
Yeah, that made no sense to me. There was that great moment at the bar with the three of them.
I thought that the amount of drinking in this one was perfect as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Compared
they kept
to the first
doing
one.
That.
Yeah.
But they had that whole, I'm from Georgia. Do I know you? Well, you know, it's funny because I was a deputy in Georgia. They did that whole...
Yeah, exactly.
There was the three guys from... Yeah. Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
And they made a few great little Dukes comments.
They did, yes.
But I think they missed the mark. They could have done, it would have been a
it
much.
Was almost there. It was almost there.
Yes.
It was almost there.
Yes. And it could have been a great B movie. And instead they just made it a B movie. They went with caricatures that would have, and they had the people that I thought could pull it off.
Actually, I didn't think for, you know, a B movie, there wasn't like one person that's sort of like, oh yeah, this is the girlfriend of the director or something like that. They were all community theater guys or whatever.
Yes,
you know?
No, they were all decent at what they did, and that's why I said you had the people there that I think could have pulled off a little better had the script been better.
Yeah,
with the exception of the girl in blue bikini. Other than that, she was just there
to be a girl in a blue bikini,
yeah.
And she's the most memorable thing about the movie.
Yeah, she gets killed early, and you know,
and she's the producer's girlfriend, and why did they bring Cash to the...
Yeah, Cash,
they had to pay Thorne, that's about it, yeah.
How do you not get paid till after? You're going to rent my boat, you're paying me. I'm going to take you out there, you're paying me. And how do you... I'm going to that island that 53 years ago I lost my best friend.
And how are they getting back if he's leaving with the boat?
Well, there you go. There you go.
James Best and his wife, Dorothy, are the ones that had the studio did this.
Yeah.
Which was
he was the executive, executive producer in the whole nine yards.
Yeah, their studio. So it was something he obviously wanted to do.
Goodbye to.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought for what it was a super fun B
Silly.
Movie. Could it have been one of the best B movies? Yes. Like, to your points, Brian.
Yeah.
But
you know what? That's what frustrates me.
It should have been better than the original, given time and thought, and it wasn't, is my problem.
Ooh, okay, you guys are guys are really doling it out today. Wow.
No,
I'm agreeing with that.
Oh, no, I completely agree with you, but what I'm saying is, wow, you're giving this way more thought than I just like, oh, this is kind of fun.
There were fun parts about it, yeah, but I just thought that it should have been better than the original.
And you had people to do it.
With the technology we have, you could take time to write. It didn't have to be done in, you know, no time at all.
You know what?
It had to been festering in James Best's mind at some point to even go and, hey, why don't we make a... Remember that movie I did 50-some years ago? We should make a sequel.
Now that it's public domain, we can. And wouldn't that be fun? Again, you have the people to do it who have the chops.
Yeah.
Who had all
John
the potential.
Schneider.
Yeah.
He was great, but he was wasted.
Yeah.
I thought the other guy, the other Dukes of Hazzard guy, was fucking great through the whole thing.
His best friend. Thorne's best friend.
Yeah, he was the most genuine person in the entire...
Oh, is that why you always call me Rick? I never knew. I thought that was great.
Yeah, and when they would cut to him and he would give him a look, it was... Yeah. You,
completely understood the look. The guy was just great with the little, the subtle shit. So you have, and I even thought that the rest of the cast who I didn't know.
Yeah.
But they could have at least, they had enough of something that they could have made it back. And so, yeah, it was funny that it was disappointing.
They literally gave them almost no backgrounds at all.
Yes.
Is the whole
problem. Well, no, like to Ryan's point, they were caricatures.
Yeah.
And
you could have. You could have gave them a little bit more meat to chew.
Yeah, because even though Killer Shrews is certainly a B-movie, I didn't think it deserved to be as far down on the list as it was.
No.
And there was some, it was self-aware, it was fun, it was intelligent, it was at least well done. Drunken coward guy in the original movie. Come on. Just wake me up before and I'll sleep. Oh, that was good. Him getting on the roof. That was intelligent. You know, he's on the fucking roof. Him turning into Bruce Davidson. And Bruce Davidson, how wasted was he?
Yeah.
Oh.
He shows up, blows a whistle.
Yeah. And...
Yeah. I think he shot his whole roles in this in like one day and went home.
Oh my god, I love that man, and it was fun to see him, and I think he had fun with it. And maybe that was it. Maybe they just wanted to go and have fun with something and spend a little money and see what happens. But it could have been good. It could have been better.
Could have been, yeah.
All right. So if it could have been better, what does this rate on the B movie scale?
You know what? I'm going to give it a, you know what? I was going to say a 2.5, and then I remembered Blue Bikini, and so I'm going to go 3.
There's the Brian we all know and love.
You know.
Oh, and then there was the orange thing, 3.25.
I kept on going, okay, when's the bikini coming off? This will make, Brian's not going to rank this unless someone gets naked. You got, like, if you really...
Oh, she was close enough. Yeah. She was close enough.
I will give it 2.5. Got made. It's okay. It had some humorous parts. It had good...
I did not approach this with a critical eye as you two did. I had a lot of fun with it. I love the original Killer Shrews. If I gave the original Killer Shrews, I think I gave it 4 stars. I'm gonna go 3.5 on this one. I had fun watching it. I thought there were some great little bits in it and stuff like that. Return of the Killer Shrew is a sequel made 53 years after the original. Give it a watch. Your mileage may vary.
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
All right, well, we've been following along with the latest animated release on the Disney app for Star Wars, and that is Star Wars Visions. And we just watched the 4th episode entitled, I Am Your Mother, which was done by world-famous British animation studio Aardman, responsible for Wallace and Gromit.
Waited for this one. I was waiting.
I was waiting and completely lived up to every expectation that I had. It was delightful. Yes. Absolutely delightful.
I am going to agree with you. I really, really loved it. It was a great little, fun little story.
What are you looking at me for?
Because, Keith, we're waiting for you to ruin it.
Never cared for Wallace and Gromit or Chicken Run. I thought this was a fun little episode, but I just don't
care. You heartless man.
I thought it played so well to... his Wookiees were not great.
I wasn't crazy about the Wookiees.
But
although I did love the Wookiee ripping off the arms.
Yeah, the Wookiee, okay.
Oh.
They're looking at him and ripping the arms.
So basically they have run by Wedge Antilles, which I thought was hysterical.
Yeah.
Rebel Training Academy for Pilots, and they're having the family race day.
Which is a cute idea.
They, of course, there is a teenage Twi'lek. Is, of course, mortified by her overbearing mother. Or her mother, who's, I shouldn't say overbearing, because that makes her sound mean or something like that. She's mortified by her mother.
I think any teenager, and I think it tripped into my own teenage.
Yeah, well, that's where I think this rings true.
Just the way.
Mom, don't hug me in front of the guys.
Yes. And how we live, and oh, you're so weird, and. Yeah.
There was also a bit of classism in this, too.
Yes. Yeah, well, okay, so, yeah, yes. So she doesn't tell her mother about the race, but there's their droid malfunctions, and there's one she's much smaller. Oh, I'm Red 2, and you're Red Leader. And so there's, of course, the mean girl and the mean girl's mother, who are the rich yes. ones with the sleek black, you know, Padme ship or whatever. Black and black. And, mom decides that, the gal forgets her lunch, mom yes. delivers her lunch and finds out about the race, and all of a sudden gets in the race.
Well, and is hurt, of course, yeah. by... You know,
why didn't you tell me about this?
Yeah, and you embarrassed me, Mom.
That was painful to hear. Like,
yeah.
That ever.
So they get into the race, and of course, the hijinks ensue. And it turns out her mom is a really great, you know, pilot, and she's adventuresome, and, you know.
She's a fun mom. Yeah. And she's the other mom cooler. Cheats. Yeah, and is not a nice mom. And the other girl, the mean girl's not a nice girl.
That's because mom's pushing the mean girl, and
they're shooting people. They're shooting lasers at people.
Their ship had a little Death Star on.
Yes, I thought that was funny.
I thought that was funny as hell.
And then it came out with a little. Boop, 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 boop. I thought that was funny. I thought that was actually funny. Just a cute episode. Yeah. This was again. Now we've gotten 4 episodes into season 2. I have enjoyed them all.
Yeah, I haven't been. I haven't been disappointed by one yet.
It has been... These 4 episodes were better than the entire first season.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So, you're not a Wallace again. So, there was some reference to Wallace and Gromit. One of the droids was supposed to be a reference to a Wallace and Gromit gag or something like that. I've only seen a couple of them, so I'm not intimately familiar yes. or whatever. But, you know, it just goes to show you can do anything you want with Star Wars.
Yeah. The droid was a dog.
Yeah. Oh, the droid was totally a dog.
A slinky yeah. dog.
Yeah. You know what? Just a fun little, cute little...
Made me... You know what? I was smiling at the end of this thing. And
it was a tropey story.
Yeah.
But I was still smiling at the end of it.
And they did it well. They executed it well. And it was just fun. And I like that they're using Twi'leks and all the different...
Ryloth roll.
Yep.
Ryloth roll indeed. We're still enjoying this one. Stick with us. Superfan Mike, I am warning you right now, if you're listening and driving in a car, pull over or you'll get into an accident. All right, so the podcast is about to get a lot worse because we have cracked the top 5 of Tubi's list of worst movies ever. And we are talking 1981's Great White, also known as The Last Shark. And to say this is an Italian ripoff of Jaws is an understatement, because it was directed by Enzo G. Castellari, screenplay by Mark Princi, and starring James Franciscus, Vic Morrow, Michaela Pignatelli, Stefania... this is a good one.
You're just making shit up now, right?
I am literally doing an Italian phrasebook right now. Stefania Girolami Goodwin, Joshua Sinclair, and Giancarlo Prete. And yes, you have the plot of Jaws, you know, where they're trying to say that Italy is the, you know, California beaches or whatever. There's an extended windsurfing scene at the beginning, and the guy gets eaten by a fucking shark. You got Vic Morrow doing, like, a really bad Scottish accent in the Quint role. Brian, you had mentioned that James Franciscus was your idea of Aquaman yes. back in the day. I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yes.
And he could have stopped the shark dead in its track. Just go home.
Yes. He could have talked to it.
Yeah.
Why are you so angry?
But yeah, you have the douchebag mayor.
Of course.
Of course. But you have the additional douchebag camera, you know, like, news crew.
Oh, God, yeah. Which they didn't have in Jaws. That was a departure.
Yeah, that was original thinking. That was a departure,
yeah.
Wow.
You have stock footage of great whites, like, lurching out of the ocean.
Yes.
And you have, and actually, I this was the thing that was most impressive. I think the shark in this was better than the shark in Jaws.
Yeah. I do.
It was comparable.
There was
they were able to do more with it though.
Yeah, I don't know what the magic in this was where their shark, their fake shark was better than Bruce or whatever.
The reason that there was not a sequel made to this was because the shark was damaged during the making of this film.
Okay. So, well, I thought that might have something to do with that the producers of Jaws put a cease and desist order on the distribution.
Universal jumped on this.
Yeah.
You know what? It was one of those where they purposefully marketed it in such a way as to make it seem like it was related to the Jaws franchise. And that's what pissed Universal off.
Well, okay, and then I'm sorry, John Williams had like a case for the music in this. It was like Jaws adjacent. Like he could have sued them for fucking
Jaws adjacent.
I was like literally like in a different. It was the Jaws theme in a different key almost or whatever. To the point where I'm like, did Ennio Morricone do this
it
or
was
something like
elevator
that?
Elevator music version of yeah. Jaws yes. music.
Yeah. Which is fine.
Which is fine.
That's they can do that. I liked both films we watched this week. I liked the beginnings, the opening.
Oh
no, yeah. The transition between the song that was playing going into the DJ booth. I liked that. I didn't say I liked the song.
Okay, because
I didn't say I liked the windsurfing element of this.
Didn't?
I didn't think windsurfing was that big in the 80s.
That's what surprised me. It surprised me that it was one of those things that I went, it was around then?
Yeah.
Enough to have a regatta?
Yeah.
Which, again, is not a regatta because there were no boats. It was windsurfing, guys. We're having a windsurfing regatta off the coast. Yeah, it was.
This was like an Italian. Italians like this is what we think California is like,
and they nailed Americana in so many places. I went, oh my god, there was a whole cheerleading thing where they did the Wells, and it was at his house, and he was on the coast, and I think it was in North Carolina. They actually there was a governor named. He was elected after this movie. But, yeah, they nailed just basic Americana. The apple pie, cheerleader,
baseball,
small town.
Chevrolet.
Yeah, baseball, Chevrolet, whole Americana thing. They got it. And I was just stunned by it. I felt better about being American after watching an Italian film.
Okay. You mean there weren't enough swarthy men with mustaches in this to make you think?
Oh, yes.
It's a great white. So what's enough of that?
Film the buoy.
Damn it, we rented the buoy. Let's film
that's,
it.
Yeah, that's not buoy. Film the buoy. Buoy. No, buoy. It's buoy. It's called a buoy in America. And what a stupid scene that was. What a stupid,
sure?
stupid
okay,
scene.
I lost a little bit of attention to this one, started looking at the Facebook or whatnot. why did Vic Morrow, what was he wired for explosives? Like he was planning on killing himself and jumping into the shark and killing
him? No, they had the explosives so that they could throw the belt.
Okay.
When it came to chomp,
makes...
throw the belt in.
Yeah.
Okay, so the idea was to offload the explosives into the shark.
Into the shark,
yeah.
Okay, because that doesn't make a lot of sense.
They didn't have an oxygen canister to throw in his mouth, so they figured they'd throw it.
Well, that's what he said, was these are the last of
the explosives.
Explosives.
Because they were trying to blow up the thing underwater.
Yes.
So well, yeah, because the shark was actually, like,
trapping them.
Yeah, like
ramming that
ramming
thing
the cave,
rocks to cover the cave face.
Yeah.
To trap them in there.
That's smart little wacky. Little wacky.
This was the smartest shark that ever existed in the history of man.
Besides
this was dolphin shark.
Jabberjaws.
Yes, Jabberjaws, but this was a dolphin shark.
Dolphin shark.
This Jabberjaw always pissed me off.
Cause he sounded like Curly?
No, it was the Scooby-Doo formula
with a shark.
Yeah.
with a shark, and then there was a band, but they lived in the underwater city or whatever.
It was like a human aquarium underwater.
It made no sense to me. I just.
Wow, you were a fun kid.
No, I came out at 50. Okay.
And losing George,
and yet he loses himself in Return of the Killer Shrews.
I am a complex man. Brian, you said it once, I am not an easy man to know.
You got some wiring that's kind of...
That's great. That's why he's here.
Yes, yes.
I'm the wind, baby. Nobody gets me.
Oh, God.
I know, I'm picturing, remember the CIA guy in MASH?
Colonel Flag.
Yeah. I am the wind. They cheapened the American experience a little bit in this Italian film. But, one, it was fun to see Vic Morrow. I love Vic Morrow.
Vic Morrow is great, however.
As a Scottish guy, not so much.
But
as Quint, you know, he did a serviceable job.
He could have been an adequate Quint.
If it was written better, he could have been an adequate Quint. He was adequate.
Adequate. Oh, God.
Wow, we're getting that from you and not him?
He's the one who gave it to me. He fed that to me.
Okay.
Did
something break there? Jesus.
There was so much more tragedy in this than in Jaws. The girl getting knocked in the water and losing her leg.
There was a lot of loose leg. There was a lot of body parts.
Yeah.
The mayor gets chomped in half, or his legs chomped off, or whatever.
Did you notice? And maybe it was just me, but the shark bit, and then it was like a foot above where the bite was that it just tore from his body. And it may have been him trying to hold up a 30-foot shark. I will say, and I had read this in the trivia, and I did check it out, the biggest great white is still under 20 feet. It's 19 feet and some odd inches. So, and they said 28. This thing was like a megalodon.
It was a baby Meg.
Yeah, it was a baby Meg. But I noticed that when he goes and bites the... It breaks off like a foot above. Both of them. And I was fucking crying when that happened. It was such a Monty Python Saturday Night Live kind of thing that I just... Bah! It did not have the intended effect on me.
You're a sick man.
Sam Peckinpah's Salad Days from Monty Python. You remember that sketch?
Uh-uh.
Where it's the upper class... Oh, I say, what a beautiful day. Anyone for tennis? And then he hits the tennis ball and it hits the gal in the eye and like blood starts squirting out in slow motion. One of my favorite sketches.
I thought, let me see, because I did write notes on this again.
Wow, look at you doing all the homework.
Yeah, I did.
Professional Brian showed up today.
We covered everything. Oh, the hospital scene with Wells and his son where after the girl gets her leg torn off and they just leave her out of the film from that point on.
There's nothing they can do for her.
They could have had her hobble out at the end.
Isn't like we cut open the shark, grab her legs back, and stick them back on there.
Again, when they pulled her out, wasn't there a leg floating?
Yeah.
Could have grabbed that and surgically reattached it.
Yeah, sewed it back on. I do love how the fucking little rack of spare ribs that they threw in the water on the pier was enough to attract the shark over there after eating 17 people. But that scene when he slapped him reminded me so much of the scene in Braveheart with Longshanks and his son, where he talks about, I'll get him next time, and Longshanks slaps him on the ground. That's exactly what I thought of during that, the drama to it. And then I almost pissed myself when James Franciscus was sitting and having the dramatic scene about her riding the bike, and you fell, and you got up, and you
you brushed the dirt and gravel off your bloody knee, and all I kept thinking was the next line has to be, well, that leg's gone. It won't bother you anymore. I was crying. Well, that leg's gone. It won't bother you anymore, honey. Oh, my God.
That's a money. Oh,
yeah. But he kept going. And I was like, oh. Yeah.
Missed opportunity.
And then Will slaps his son, and I'm picturing Longshanks hitting his son in Braveheart. Oh. And I don't even know how long it's been since I've seen that film that would strike me as the... Man. And then his son is standing there with his hand on his cheek. We're going to go get it.
If only there was a way to watch movies through your brain. Wow.
Dude, I keep it... Because I watched it twice again. I watched the regular version, and then I watched the Riff Tracks version. It's just a... And I just... Maybe that's the next stage of the Three Old Geeks, is we do a Riff Tracks or something, and have Brian comment during the course of the movie, like, oh my God, that reminds me of Brave, and Keith and I can look at him like, what the fuck are you talking about?
He said, we're going this way.
If you watch that scene again, and then you watch the Braveheart scene, you will go, oh my God, Brian, you are right. If you watch the scene with the...
I don't know if those words can actually physically come out of my mouth. I don't know. In that combination, I don't think. Review all our podcasts. I don't think those words have come.
That's
out
the mind. Fonzie, like, oh, I was.
Exactly.
And then when the guy gets tangled up in the shit in the helicopter, why did he go to the helicopter? What was the point of that? What was the point of going into the helicopter? Outside, it gives you another chance to float the hand by. Because that was the only thing I could see. That was the only reason to be in the helicopter was to... I kept expecting, like, the remember the jump scare in Jaws with the hole in the boat?
Yeah.
Boom. Which, again, they did.
Still gets me every time.
They had the hole in the boat that for the boat that didn't sink. Good, it's listing a lot. No, it's sinking. It should be... It has a hole in it that you can see when you're looking to get the hand. You can see into the ocean from there. Boats aren't supposed to do that. That's a bad thing for a boat.
They don't float when you...
Yeah, if you look at the bottom of a boat and you can see the bottom of the sea,
yes,
you're in bad shape.
That's not going to float for...
That's not an air pressure thing. It doesn't... Well, as long as we stay in this part of the sea, it won't come in. But
there's a lot of salt here to make it float.
If we go where the water's denser, it's going to shoot through here. But I kept watching that. I don't even know where I was going. Oh, why did he go into the helicopter? It makes no sense to me that went into...
the mayor?
Vic Morrow.
Oh.
No, the mayor made even less sense. Let's go. Let's take the helicopter. What was his plan? I'm trying to catch the shark.
I love the fact he's trying to make sense of this movie. It's kind of fun, but...
Well, what was his plan? That was... And the scene... It's the same thing with the boat that has a big bar that you put the meat on, and I thought that the stock footage they used of the great whites was really well done. Actually, there was some scary ones that they had in there that I was like, oh, that was really good. Whatever his name is, way to put that stock footage in. But it was different, clearly different sized sharks. And
it's perspective. It's all perspective.
And the way that they actually tied the shark that kept biting the thing in the cage, because they were in a shark cage.
Yeah.
But they would almost, like, it almost looked like the fencing that they put up at the beginning. And then it almost looked like something else. It almost looked like something.
It was the Italian knockoff of the stock footage.
Yeah. It was almost... And so you'd go, oh, that almost looks like that, even though we've seen that exact scene like the three times now in different places. But how cool. And like, we wouldn't pick up the scarring on the nose of the shark was different. So, okay, that's obviously a different shark. They couldn't even get the makeup correct.
You know how hard it is to put makeup on a shark.
gotta be
they
quick.
They don't sit still.
You gotta be quick.
Well, they have to constantly move in order to live.
Order to breathe.
I know.
But anyway.
So you have to ride on top of him.
I could not figure out why he went into the helicopter. Like, was he expecting someone to be alive? Was he expecting to find somebody? Or was he, and then I will send you a sign, which was the floating raft? That was the sign, hey, I'm in trouble? Because that James Franciscus then picked up. And if you know the shark's there, why do you jump in the water then? Does that make any sense to anybody? That's the time I'm going to jump in the water is when I know that the shark is there. I have absolute irrefutable evidence that the shark is there. This is when I'm going to go in the water.
It's what the shark least expects. Yes. Got confused. Went,
oh my God! Why is he jumping? Why is he coming in the water? That makes no sense to me. Wait, he might have some bombs. I better stop and think this through.
Surprise
as a shark.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But then he finds him, and he's all tangled up in steel wiring. Why was that there that much? There shouldn't have been. The shark already took it.
I thought the wiring that was wrapped around, like, when I turned back to the movie, I was like, why? I thought that was all part of the explosive, which would completely confuse me. I thought that was, like, the wiring for the explosives.
No, it was, you know, the shit that...
They put the wiring
They hung... Well, oh. No. Oh. I thought it was the shit that they were dropping in the water to catch the shark. Because he had like 90 feet of...
Because I remember they dropped
which was a rope.
Earlier they dropped the wiring in for the regatta.
Yes.
So we'll fence this off.
But it was
stop it.
But it was all in the helicopter. Except that it would not have been there because that broke. When it broke is what knocks Wells out of the helicopter. And then I kept thinking to myself, just put your legs up. Because you're trying to hold on to the thing with wet hands. Put your legs up.
Yeah. Hook your legs up around the skin of the okay.
And then hold like this, and then you're holding on. Because your hands are too small. You're too small.
And you're wet.
Yeah, there's a lot of girth to that.
Okay, once again, the conversation about the movie was way more fun than...
Wait, he's not done.
He's
still thinking.
So Jesus Christ. He's caught up in the wiring.
He could
this
just
is,
walk on
this
water.
Is his,
He'd be okay.
This is his downfall, is that he somehow gets caught up in this wiring because he's a shark diving expert. Oh no, there's wiring. And then the shark swims by and grabs the wire and swims off knowing that it's going to pull Vic Morrow and kill him. And then all of a sudden Vic Morrow's like, whoa! And he's off. And he's dead because, well, he's going to die. You knew he was going to die. He wasn't going to die in the Quint way. But he dies. And then the fucking the guy hangs the spare ribs from the pier. And this, how stupid is this? That's the shark grabs it. And it's got like a 4-foot length of rope. But he pulls the entire pier out to the middle of the ocean with people on it. And you got the guy, the hunter. What was his purpose? Why did you even pay that actor? He had a dead chicken on the back of his jacket. And he walked with a cowboy hat. He was, I got me a gun. See how explosive these bullets are? 4 seconds and these things go off like thermite. and then he drops it. He doesn't even shoot the rifle.
They didn't have thermite in the budget, so you could only have a gun.
He drops the fucking rifle, and he even mentions it. Oh my God, you made me drop my rifle.
I said at the beginning of the program, it was Friday energy.
But wait.
You're still going.
There's more.
You're still going. Dude, this is a Sunday. It is not Friday. What did you... I mean...
But no headlines, no nothing.
How does fucking Vic Morrow then appear at the end on the pier?
He washes up on it. I even saw that.
He washes up on it?
You're trying to make sense of an Italian knockoff of Jaws, dude.
As believable as anything else that happens in this movie.
He washes up on it?
The ocean currents carried him up on the pier!
And then did you see James Franciscus? Okay, two things now. I'm just going to... Two things.
That are going to last 45 minutes.
Yeah, because we're pushing 25 minutes already on this.
This is a movie. Give it its due.
you can't unpack it just in a minute. You can't. These things don't happen that way.
Not
so
in
anyway,
mind anyway.
No. So then Vic Morrow washes up on the pier.
What did you?
And I can't figure out why James Franciscus gets off the boat onto the pier, because you knew that was gonna go. That was going south right away. What the fuck was wrong with him? That he has to get out of the pier. He has to jump from the boat onto the pier. Why? It's like
quits
he,
there. He's
no, quits no. He hauls up like three heavy fat people from, and then his little wife, who weighs like 40 pounds, soaking wet. Right? She's the one he has to jump so he can lift her on the boat. And then the pier gets dragged off, and I'm thinking to myself, is there nobody on the fucking boat that was going to drag the boat to the pier to get him? That is just, oh, he's fucked. What? The boat's even running. The boat is fucking running. And they're all like, ah, oh, he's just fucked, man. We lost him. Sorry, dude. And then fucking Quint comes up on the boat, washes up on the piece of pier, and James Franciscus is fighting off a 30-foot shark with a fucking piece of wood. And then the wood, he waits till the mouth is open to come in. He doesn't bang on the shark at all. He just shoves it in his mouth. But then he's trying to pull Vic Morrow from the shark's jaws. And he's like, he's grabbing at him. And that's what makes him grab the detonator. The detonator. And then he realizes, oh my god, that whole belt on the dead man that she's eating. And the shark had to float out. And like, wonk, wonk, wonk. And each time they would come back to the shark, a little bit more of Vic Morrow was gone. And then why did James Franciscus, what was the point of,
why are you still talking about this movie? Literally, why are you still, you are like, you are, Brian, you're in total Brian stream of consciousness mode right now. As funny as it is, we're going on 25 minutes on an Italian Jaws. Oh god.
Wait, why is it that James Franciscus had to jump off the pier to detonate it? Was that just the action shot? Was that just the
It was just the action shot, Brian.
He just has to run and jump. Fuck you, shark!
Finally come up for air?
I'm just trying to figure out, why didn't they hobble out their daughter at the end? Why didn't they hobble out?
Going back around to that.
That's what's missing.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to put a
disclaimer?
A disclaimer at the beginning of this thing.
That we don't do any sort of drugs?
No, that Mike needs to stop driving at this point in the podcast. Because I know what makes Mike laugh, and this is going to make Mike laugh and pull off the road. We don't want him crashing. After that diatribe.
No drugs were taken before.
There was not even Red Vines involved with this. Yeah. I told you, it was Friday energy tonight. This afternoon. I have to end this now, as delightful as this.
I ended it already.
We have been recording for 15 minutes.
We're going on a half an hour on this one movie, dude.
You gotta learn to cut the mic.
We have transcended the top five.
It's gonna get better.
No,
there
are no police involved. You have a governor. You have
okay,
the...
Okay, now I'm cutting writer. It off, because you're just gonna go on another half an hour.
Get the army in there.
You will not. This conversation was far better than the movie. Give it a watch, but it's not going to be as fun as this.
The Three Old Geeks are now on YouTube. Check us out there and don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. If you can't find us, stop by our Facebook page to get a link. And while you're there, drop us a line and let us know what you think of the podcast. Tune in next week, same geek time, on all your favorite apps for all new, all different material. Thanks a lot for listening, and hey, keep on geeking on.